Okie dokie. The training world is full of technical editing courses that don't teach you the high-end creativity that viewers expect. Inside the Edit was created specifically to teach you every single creative skill you'll ever need to mesmerize your audience. Hello again, dear friends, and welcome back to another episode of Once Upon a Timeline, the official podcast of Inside the Edit. Thank you for joining me, Paddy Bird, for episode 7, part 2 of our interview with Hollywood film editor Eddie Hamilton. Now, last week's show was absolutely awesome. We've had some great feedback. If you haven't listened to it yet, do go back and check it out. It's full of so much great content. Eddie gave us a ton of inspiration and masterful insight, really, into the mind of a high-end drama editor. I loved hearing about how he crafted his career from the very beginning and forced himself to learn, to chase every single opportunity, and to turn himself into the extremely successful editing artist that he is today. You know, it takes a very special kind of person to share an edit suite with people like Tom Cruise and Jerry Bruckheimer. So, in this second part of our interview, Eddie delves into loads more really interesting subjects, which I found just as fascinating. From how he talks to directors, to what movies have inspired his pace and timing skills, to how he makes himself incredibly valuable on any production. Yet again, listening to someone who has risen to the very top of their genre and hear their thoughts on how to craft a career is deeply inspiring, and I'm sure you're going to get a load out of it. But before we start, don't forget to stay tuned, because after Eddie's interview, we have a brand new competition. In fact, it's a 100% Eddie competition, as not only is this question based around the films he's cut, but he is going to personally choose his favorite answer. Some lucky editor is going to win an annual Creative Cloud license, courtesy of our good friends over at Adobe. So hang on in there after the interview. Okay then, it's time to jump back into part 2 of our interview with Hollywood film editor Eddie Hamilton.
People often forget that, you know, whatever kind of genre that we're working on, when a director comes in, when a producer comes in, they're usually pretty stressed, really. They've got the weight of the world. And it's like, how do we give them a nice, big, warm hug and show them something cool? And I was saying, I think on last week's episode or the week, I can't remember which one, but it's the idea of the language that we say to them is like, this is a work in progress. So we don't sit there. I don't sit there and say, you know, I think this is wrong. I think this is bad. I think this is, you know what I mean? It's like, no, there's a collaborative thing, and you're creating this idea in their mind that we're on a journey and all problems can be solved. And it just, It makes, you can feel the weight go off them when they come into our suite.
You're absolutely right. The term that I use is, here's a sketch of the scene. Like when I present the first version of a scene, I say, I've done a sketch of the scene.
Nice,
sometimes I've done 2 or 3 sketches. So I'll say, here's a sketch of the scene. Here's another way to start the scene. To be honest, you can't actually tell how to start or finish any scene until you have the scene before and the scene after. But, You know, sometimes you want to start on a close-up. Sometimes you want to start on a wide shot. Sometimes you want to start on a detail of an insert or something which is significant, you know, in the story. But I always say, here's a sketch. So I start it off in that term, knowing that, and I'm not ashamed to recut anything as many times as they like. And I also try any idea that is presented, because usually I can try it almost as quickly as they're saying it. So instead of sitting there debating whether it's any good or not, I'll just go, OK, I'll do it. And I'll just throw it together quickly and we can watch it and decide if it's better. And like you said, more than once, I've thought to myself, this is not going to work. Then when I physically cut the two shots together and watched it, I've gone, it works. Mm. And I'm really glad I didn't say that's not going to work.
Mm.
And again, sometimes the director will go, hey, that works. That's cool. And I'll be thinking, I don't know, but I'll give it a go and I'll leave it on the timeline. And sometimes it can stay there for weeks or months. And then there might be a point where the director goes, hey, you know that version you did? Let's just take a look at that one you did at the beginning. Or the other version that you showed me, you know. And sometimes things come full circle and they'll drop back in. But I'm never precious about it, because there is no right and wrong when you're in that creative stage of building something. There's just no right or wrong answers. In my opinion, the audience is right about how they feel when they watch your film, because they've given you time from their life to watch something and they're entitled to have an opinion about it. And their opinion is correct because it's their opinion. And so I'm honoured to have any reaction to what I present to people, good or bad, because they have given their time to engage with it and interact with it. And as we all know, our art, most art, I guess, doesn't mean anything unless someone interacts with it somehow. You know, if no one watches your film, it doesn't really exist in any way, you know. And so you want people to interact with it and you want feedback. And ultimately, if you're getting consistent feedback from the audience, they're probably right and you need to listen to that. And that's one thing which on these very expensive movies we take incredibly seriously is test screening the movie to a cold audience who have no idea what they're coming to watch, and being in the audience when they watch it, soaking up the atmosphere and then listening carefully to their reaction and addressing the pace issues or the confusion that they're telling us that they're feeling, because they are right ultimately. And there's a lot of subjective things that you can argue about, but if the audience is, if it's clearly not working for the audience, you've got work to do, you know, and you have to listen to that, in my opinion. And if you want to make mass entertainment the way that, you know, Mission Impossible does or Top Gun does, you know, I want as many people as possible to watch and love the film, you know. And if I can make a 1% difference or a 2% difference right at the end, like even this weekend, we're making changes to the edit on Top Gun and we're really close to the finish line. Even if it's one line of dialogue, and I can improve it, it is a percent better and it's forever, you know. And you want every single moment in the film to be singing, you know, and I take that very seriously. And I never, you know, we're always stress testing the movie and interrogating it. And even when you're on the final sound mix, you'll still be learning and discovering things about the film, you know. And until the kind of finished DCP, you know, the digital cinema package is made, which is what gets distributed to cinemas around the world, until that's made, you know, I think you should be constantly looking to improve it and change it and evolve it, and you know, and eventually you'll stop. But because the technology allows us to change it, I think that we owe it to the audience and the film to continuously try to improve it, you know, until the very, very end of the process. And when I've worked with, you know, very expert producers, it never ceases to amaze me how they are chasing every single detail of the movie to get it as good as it can be, you know, and they're not leaving anything to chance, you know. You can't quite appreciate what that means until you are right in the thick of it and you're living it every day, you know. But it's why these people are so successful and why they've reached that level in the industry, is because they drill down on every tiny little moment of the film to make sure that it absolutely sings, you know. And I hope when you watch, you know, Mission Impossible Fallout, you feel that, you know, Chris McQuarrie is really, he really takes his responsibility as a creator of mass entertainment very seriously. And he's a phenomenally good storyteller and editor. And he has this genetic comprehension of how the audience will react to everything in the movie, every way the music cue changes or every line of dialogue. The editing is so precise in those movies in terms of generating emotion with every cut and connecting you with the characters and allowing you to feel the characters, you know. But I didn't understand that when I was starting out. You know, it's something that you kind of absorb through experience and through working with other great editors, like, you know, when I was working with Lee or working with really talented directors like Matthew Vaughn.
I just want to pick up on something that you said, which I think was really interesting. You were talking about how Matthew Vaughn had such an impact on your career. And he'd obviously, you know, to a certain extent, put his neck out on the line for you to say, look, this guy's good. He needs to be trialed and tested and all that kind of stuff. But let's give him the chance to go through these. And he kind of stepped up that ladder. Yeah. And it kind of brings up that whole idea, which I think is really important to people new to the craft or people looking to kind of step up that ladder, is this whole idea about the relationship with our clients. And that I personally always think about any director or producer I'm working with, I don't think of it as a one-off contract, one-off film, one-off documentary, whatever I'm working on. I think that as a kind of potentially lifelong, career-long collaboration, if we feed and grow that relationship and take care of it. And it's really important as the freelance editor as well.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. You know, there are a lot of occasions where, you know, I've been given an opportunity to work on something and it's grown into a lot more. You know, I did, I was invited to work on the Ewan McGregor, Charlie Borman motorbike series Long Way Down, which was on BBC Two a few years ago. Initially, I was just asked to help on like one episode. And the way that they did it is they split the journey up into like six chunks. And then we all, like six editors, worked on six chunks. And then it became clear that the episodes would be not quite in those six chunks. And so we kind of took over a little bit of someone else's episode and we gave half of our episode to another editor. Do you see what I mean? So we all kind of collaborated. And that led to, you know, a load more work with the same guys. You know, I ended up working on two episodes ultimately, and then I worked on taking the six episodes and making a 10 episode version for international using all the deleted scenes and actually editing all 10 episodes, which was, you know, a lot of taking the six episodes and reconstituting them and then doing another episode of another series. So, and it was that, it was just, again, the enthusiasm. And, you know, I was probably a bit cheaper than some of the other editors because they were enormously experienced editors. And I learned a lot from them about structuring a documentary like that and how to use music and how to make sure that each little tiny moment had a beginning and a middle and an end. Sometimes I would forget to put the beginning in or forget to put the full stop on the sequence, you know. In my first assemblies, and they would very, very graciously go, you've forgotten a bit of setup there, or you just haven't quite ticked the box at the end. The audience is, you've just left the audience hanging and they just need to settle before you take them on to the next bit. And so I learned a lot about those kinds of shows when I was doing that. But again, it all led to more stuff, you know. So I agree with you. And the other thing is to, I would say, to try and make yourself really value added in the editorial process. So, you know, I do take a lot of pride in contributing creatively in the sound mix, you know, in the grade, in visual effects reviews, and trying to make sure that I'm keeping track of extra lines of dialogue that need to be recorded, or, you know, little tweaks to visual effects that need to get done, or and just doing a lot of the heavy lifting so the director doesn't have to worry about that stuff, you know. Like just trying to manage the process and streamline the process with my team and with the post supervisor so that the director can just relax a little more, that all the things he's just talking about in a review will be noted down and will be taken care of instantly, so they never have to go, you know, when I said that thing the other day, what was it? Does anyone remember what I said when we were looking at that shot? oh, we can't, you know, it's like I've noted it down already and I've texted my team and they're already on the case. And, it, you know, the extra line of dialogue's being recorded, you know, half an hour later or whatever it is. Do you see what I mean? Mm. So I try to make sure that I'm always on top of that stuff. So everyone's life is just easy. You know, a director's life is easy or a producer's life is easy. I don't know really if other editors do that necessarily, because you don't collaborate with other people very often. And you talk to other editors about how they do it, but you don't really know the ins and outs and the details of what other people do. So I just try and really be a creative partner, you know, with the director and the producers all the way to the very end. You know, I just try to make that relationship as productive and as collaborative as possible for as long as possible, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
It's amazing, actually, because we do spend a vast part of our lives by ourselves in a room. And when do you ever, you know, talk in serious detail about what you do, what your creative process is, with another editor? I mean, it's very, yeah, very rare, really. I mean, if you're working in a post house, you might have a bit of a water cooler moment, or, you know, stuff like that, but you probably wouldn't be talking through all of the actual specifics of what you're going to go through. And everyone has their own process. And because there's no universally agreed set of terminology or structure or ways to do things, and, you know, we're all kind of like cavemen and cavewomen in our own little caves trying to discover fire by ourselves. It's like, it yeah, really is a kind of self-taught art, really.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, you know, I'm sure you'd agree with me that most things in life are ultimately self-taught, because you have to put in the work to get good.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to play the piano, yeah, if you want to do an ollie on a skateboard, you have to teach yourself how to do it, because you can watch YouTube videos, but until you physically go out there and fall off a skateboard, before you magically somehow one day do an ollie and you're like, oh my God, I just did an ollie. You know, it's something which has to be self-taught. Ultimately, you can't, there is no shortcut. So we're all, you know, if you want to learn how to bake a cake, you're going to screw up a load of times before you, yeah, make a good cake, you know. And it's the same with being a stuntman, you know, and or being an Olympic diver or whatever. It's like you have to, it's baby steps, and you have to ultimately teach yourself how to do it. It's like, I remember thinking to myself when I was starting out, I'm going to try and be one of the best in the world at what I do. I probably will never be, but I'm going to try and be the best in the world, because that's the only way you're going to kind of continuously improve. You know, on Kick-Ass, Pietro Scalia came in for several months and worked on that film with us. And so I got to watch him work.
Genius.
And then I got to visit him a couple of times. And one of my favorite films of all time is JFK, certainly from an editing point of view.
Oh, but, my God. The way he used archive with that was just mixing archive with... I watched that and I was doing... I think that was a seminal movie for me to watch editing-wise. Like, I've done a lot of, like, archive documentaries, and that was the one thing to get me in the zone before I did... Right, I'm working on a historical archive. I'm going to go and watch that. It's phenomenal. Yeah. Absolutely phenomenal.
But also the way that they texture some of the archive, and the way that they treat it, and the way that they use sound to pre-lap, you know, the transitions, and the way that they the rhythms of the shots, you know, and the variation in pace of the oh my God, it's just unbelievable. And one of the things I'm going to do one day is go through that movie and literally step through it almost frame by frame and just watch what they did. I haven't had time, but if I get some time off, like, that is one of the movies that I feel can be studied on a granular level. You will learn, like, study the sound, study the dialogue, study the music, and study how all that builds with the rhythms of the picture cutting to create this extraordinary, mesmerizing audio-visual feast. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is completely engaging for like 3 hours.
It's a long movie. It's a really, but it doesn't feel like it. It just shoots by. I mean, if you want a lesson in tempo editing, any kind of pace and timing, that's your first place to go, man. I mean, that is the
absolute masterclass. Yeah, and I remember also, you know, other great long movies. You can watch Bridge on the River Kwai.
Mm.
Unbelievable movie. Very long, flies by. Dances with Wolves. Very long, flies by. I would even say Avatar, you know, which is very similar to Dances with Wolves. Mm. But if you watch Avatar, very long movie, flies by. Showed it to my kids a few weeks ago, and they were like, what's this? I said, trust me. Oh, because they'd watched Titanic. Very long movie, flies by.
Yeah.
You know, I think they watched Titanic twice in a week because they loved it so much, my kids. And
twice in a week?
Twice in a week, I think.
Have you got two new editors coming into the Hamilton family?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? But they were like, what else has this director done? And I said, well, I'll show you Aliens when you're a bit older and The Abyss. But Terminator 2, but we're going to watch Avatar. And again, he makes it look so easy. And that there was a version of Avatar that was like 4 hours long, by all accounts, you know, much longer version of the movie. But they just got it down to this incredibly tight fan. And, you know, study Avatar for great sound mixing as well, of how to mix action sequences so they don't tie your ears out, you know. It's so difficult to do a battle sequence where you're not overwhelmed with stimulus. And they do it so well in that movie. Saving Private Ryan as well. You know, it's like the sound design on that opening sequence, as well as the picture cutting, is just, it's just a tour de force of awesome expert work, you know, from every department, you know, camera, editorial, sound, music, everything is just like nuts. I'm sure there are people out there listening to this kind of nodding along going, yeah, I love all those movies as well. And I would say if you really want to do this, focus on it and try and be the best at it and just do not give up. I mean, there were times in my career where it's been a real struggle or I have, you know, there was a time where several movies fell through one after the other. And I was really worrying how I was going to pay the rent, you know. And myself and my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, but we were really like, what are we going to do? You know, but if you love it, you have to do it. It's not a choice. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I would be doing this for free if I wasn't being paid to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm very fortunate that I'm able to earn a living from it. And that is something that we can make a living from, you know, because, you know, people are willing to pay money to go to the cinema and buy movie tickets or pay for a Netflix subscription or a TV license so they can watch the BBC. And, you know, it's, we're so lucky to do what we do, you know.
Absolutely, mate. I mean, what's really interesting, it really is the best job in the world. I love it. I've been obsessed with it my whole career. You know, one thing, when you just listening to you talk in that last answer there, I mean, what's really interesting, and I'm always, you know, probably it's my editing brain trying to look for themes and connections and stuff like that, but talking to other editors, there's one thing which I think connects a lot of successful editors, and I think that is, and this it's a very interesting debate I think to have around learning anything, as you say, anything, but in terms of an art, a craft that is inherently difficult, and there's 10,000 people behind you who are also trying to do that job as well. And it's very simply will. Like, what, in my opinion, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, what separates so many people is the will to do something, the will to stay very, very late, the will to go above and beyond, to make yourself absolutely indispensable. You know, the long list of things which you still do to this day to make yourself indispensable to a director. But even going back to the start of your career, working for free for 5 days on or working for, you know, a cheap amount, or doing commercial work for a channel, just the will it takes to succeed. And I think that's what separates a lot of people who succeed and who don't succeed. And yes, you need breaks and all that kind of stuff, but
yeah,
having that will I think is a really interesting discussion.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm not sure where it's come from, it's like I just love the end result so much. And, you know, watching Star Wars and seeing how much of an impact that had on so many people and on culture, and just thinking that one day you might have a chance of being part of something which has that impact on a global scale is just so exciting and humbling. You know, it's like being part of something like The Lord of the Rings, which is just or Harry Potter, you know, those movies, or the Bond movies or something, where it's like, you know, that people will still be watching Lord of the Rings in 50 years. You know, that those are like gold plated all time classic movies. And to just think that one day you might play a part in that is what just keeps me going. I'm not sure. It's just I've had it since I was 8. I've just been obsessed with films, and I've been obsessed with trying to somehow be part of it. You know, of that world of artistic collaboration and creation and storytelling and escapism. You know, it's just innate. It's just inside me, you know. And you meet other people out there who have the same passion and love for it. My wife sometimes says, all you talk about is movies. It's not all I talk about, but it is 99% of what I talk about, you know. But it's because it's my passion. You know, and I love watching movies and learning about different filmmakers and different techniques and admiring how, you know, modern films get made, you know, and how the art form breaks new ground every year creatively by the advent of technology, mostly with, you know, different kinds of cameras and drones and visual effects and motion capture. And, you know, over the last few years, that's kind of what's kind of pushed the boundaries of the technology. Look at The Mandalorian, you know, how they filmed that. Astonishing. You watch it and you're like, wow, I'm in Star Wars, but they were on like a soundstage with gigantic LED screens. You know, the mind boggles, you know, it really does. And, you know, and it's exciting because, like, in the last year, I've had some incredible experiences and I've met some idols of mine creatively. You know, we did some of our sound mixing for Top Gun at the Skywalker Ranch. And so I got to work and meet like Ben Burtt. He wasn't working on our film, but he sat and had breakfast in the cafe every morning. And I sat and chatted with him. And with Gary Rydstrom, who's got, I don't know, like 11 Oscars or something. I mean, the number of Academy Awards at the Skywalker Ranch is colossal.
Yeah.
And I got to ask Ben Burtt what it was like editing the Star Wars prequels and what it was like inventing the sounds for the lightsaber and for the X-Wings and for RTD2. And these people, they are godfathers now of our industry. You know, they weren't when they started out. They were mavericks like we were when we started out and breaking rules and trying new stuff. But now they're the veterans, but they are still just as passionate about it. You know, they still have the spark. It's there. It's bright as day. You go and talk to Ben Burtt and he still loves sound like he did when he was 20, you know, inventing the sound for the lightsaber. And it's exciting to think that spark is still alive and well. And I imagine it probably will be alive and well in me for like another 20 years if I'm lucky enough to work that long, you know, and still be healthy to work that long. You know, so when you see it in other people, you feel a kindred spirit, you know. And I feel a kindred spirit listening to you on Inside the Edit, on Outside the Edit, and on the Once Upon a Timeline. I'm smiling along with everything you're saying, and I'm learning from you. I'm still like a sponge for information from anyone, any little tiny morsel of useful information that I can use to improve. I take it on board, you know. And so, you know, I'm sure there are people out there listening to this who are feeling the same way. And if I can help, or, you know, if you learn anything from what I'm saying, or if you can get inspired by it, then great. I'm thrilled, you know.
Oh, that's beautiful words, Eddie. Thank you so much. And thanks for the kind words about Inside the Edit. I mean, it is a beautiful thing to have that kind of collaborative process and taking inspiration from so many other great artists around. I mean, I learn watching great editing artists, you know. I mean, think about the last 20, 30 years, the amount of amazing movies that have changed me, that I've immersed and I've sucked into my consciousness and gone, wow, look at the cutting pattern of that. Look at the way they've structured this. That's what ended up on screen. I wonder what ended up on the cutting room floor. All those things that go turn around in my head. And watching an editing artist and seeing their work and listening to them talk about that, I mean, it's just, it's so inspirational. It's so beautiful. I mean, just the, some of the stuff you said tonight on, you know, we're, by the way, everybody, we're sitting here late tonight. It's like 11:05 UK time. And we're just two editors going rap, 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 rap. I mean, it's beautiful. Exactly, it's just so, you get two editors talking about the craft, they won't stop. So it's really, really beautiful and some fantastic inspiration there, certainly for our listeners. I mean, just as a last kind of question, Eddie, I know it's really late, but I'd love to hear what you got to say on this. What would you say your main advice is for the young editor coming in, or from the editor who's in a certain position but wants to get out and do something different or more or climb the ladder or get to their passion? What would you say that one thing is?
I think the single most important thing is to understand where you want to end up, right? Because the industry is a ladder. You could start climbing a ladder in commercials and then look around you and go, oh, hang on, I've somehow ended up in commercials, and I always imagined I'd be doing long form, but somehow I got a job as a runner in a place that did commercials, and I've worked my way up, and I'm in the wrong place. Now, if you want to switch to a different ladder, it's not that easy. Sometimes you have to take a step down a few rungs in order to move across and then work your way up. Sometimes you may collaborate with a director who gets to shoot a movie, and therefore you will be invited to cut a feature. And obviously that works. That has worked for a lot of great editors out there, but not always. And so the main thing is to think, where do I want to end up? You know, and that's something that I was very conscious of. I was like, I do want to work on movies. So I'm going to try and climb that ladder somehow, with the odd diversion into TV drama / documentary / corporate films / short films, whatever came along. I was always willing to do everything and everything, you know, to try and meet more people and learn more skills and, you know, practice more. But I think it's trying to think about, I'm going to try and climb this ladder. That would be the most important thing that I say. So when I meet people who want to become, you know, my trainee on a feature film, normally I would expect them to have done, say, 2 years in a post facility, starting as a runner and working their way up to edit assistant, maybe even doing a bit of editing. But then I would feel that they're ready to become a trainee assistant editor or a PA on a big film, because you will feel like you know a lot. And all the information that you will have learned in a facility and all the mistakes you will have made, like accidentally deleting media and then having to redigitize it, which we've all done, or re-import it, or, you know, get it off a backup or whatever it is. That stuff, which I want you to have made those mistakes before you come and work with me. Like, I made all those mistakes myself. And
yeah, we all did. Yeah.
When you've deleted some media, and you open your sequence and you see all the red off, and you're like, oh, it's, you know, you feel the cold shiver up the back of your neck, and you're like, oh my God, I have really screwed up, and I've got like an hour to fix this before the director comes in. What am I going to do? You know, I want my trainees to have been in that situation and learned never to do that again. So I expect them to have done a couple of years. Now, when you come out of university or a film school, you'll think, I know all this stuff. But trust me, go to a facility and you will find that you learn a ton more stuff that you didn't even know you weren't aware of. And then when you come onto a film, you will learn a ton more stuff about how, you know, the workflow for a big movie and how much dailies come in and how much paperwork you have to do and how you turn over the dailies to the producers to watch and all that stuff. But for every movie, I try and look out and find somebody who has contacted me and said, I'm interested in becoming a trainee. And sometimes I can see that they're a couple of years away from being ready, you know, and I'll say, get a job in a post facility. Sometimes they're a long way away. And I say, realistically, you have to move to London, you know, or Paris or New York or wherever it is that the nearest creative hub, you know, Rome, Munich, I guess, in Germany. You have to move to where the center of the industry is in your home country. And it's quite scary to do that if you're not from that part of the world. But it's necessary to expose yourself and be available to take opportunities and then work your way up the ladder. And then ultimately it comes down to keeping a good sense of humor, smiling a lot, working hard, not making mistakes. The fact is that one mistake, and we all know this, one mistake will be remembered for much longer than like 100 things you got right. It's just human nature, you know? And so not making mistakes in editorial is really important. And I do stress that to my team from day one. I get everyone in a room and I say, look, guys, our entire reputation rests on us delivering work which is 100% accurate. And one chink in that armor and people will not trust us. And I want people, I want a producer to hire me and just have a big green tick over post-production and he knows he doesn't have to worry about a thing. You know, it's like everything is beautifully presented, you know, all the quick times are properly labeled and all the sound is correct and all the burn-ins are correct and it just has to be like clockwork and nothing is too much trouble and everything is done right. And also get it done when you say you will have it done. You know, if I ask you to do something, I want you to really think about how long it will take you and then how long it will take you to check it twice and then tell me how long you need. So if I say, when can you have this ready? Don't underestimate and say 30 minutes. Overestimate and say 75 minutes and then guarantee you'll give it to me in 75 minutes because I would have planned my day around receiving that piece of work. And they all understand that and they understand and check it. And if you're too tired, get one of the other guys on the team to check it and help you, you know, because we've all got each other's backs, like I said right at the beginning. But all that stuff is so important. And then it's about telling people what you want. So if you want to stop being an assistant editor and become an editor, tell directors that you want to edit. Just be really out there. Tell the editors that you want to edit. Tell the producers that you want to edit. You know, I have one of my assistants who worked with me, you know, on it. He started off as my trainee on X-Men and moved up through Kingsman and Mission Impossible, both missions. He said to me, I want to edit. And the visual effects editor on the last mission, he said to me, I want to edit. So I said, guys, I am not hiring you for the next film. I need to let you go so you have the opportunity to get out there and find work as an editor and not like rely on the comfort of the assistant editing job, which will pay the bills. And So I phoned them up right at the beginning and I said, I'm not hiring you because I want you to succeed as an editor and I will recommend you for editing jobs. And if somebody calls me and says, who have you got who's young and hungry who can do this? I'll recommend you guys. But it's up to you now to go out there and like make your own way and tell people that you want to edit, you know, and call the producers and the directors that we've worked with and say, I want to edit. If you know any young directors who want an editor, please, would you recommend me? And word will get out. It may take a few months, but word will get out eventually and you'll find yourself making connections with people and slowly getting opportunities to cut. But you have to put yourself out there and build those personal relationships with other creative people and really be bold about stating your desires for what you want to achieve in the industry, you know. And I'm all for it. I encourage my team to edit a scene a week minimum from at least. I say, guys, if you have time or if you want to make time, take the dailies from a scene and do an assembly of it without watching what I've done. And if you want, I'll tell you what the hardest scene was this week. I'll say the scene I found most challenging, and you guys go away and see what you can do with it. And then let's all watch it on Friday lunchtime. Let's all sit down and watch what we've all done. And quite a lot of time, the days are so intense that they don't have time. But sometimes people do make time and they'll come up with some cool stuff. Sometimes I'll say, I'm going to steal that idea and put it in the film. And if the director says to me, that's a cool idea, I will give you credit for it immediately. Like, it's very important that...
Good karma.
The credit goes to where it's due, you know. Or if one of my team comes up with a great piece of music and the director says, that's a great piece of temp, I'll say, you know, that was his idea or whatever, or her idea. It's really important to me that as the leader of, as the head of department, you make sure that everyone gets credit for what they do, and you celebrate everybody and you're grateful to everybody's contribution, you know, every day.
Mm.
There's a great book, if you haven't read it, it's called Creativity Inc. It's by Ed Catmull. It is about, Ed Catmull started Pixar, and the book is about how to enable creativity in other people. And it's something which, you know, every producer and director should read. It's truly eye-opening and a real page-turner. But also, if you are in a position of authority at all, like I have several assistant editors working with me, and I want to kind of inspire creativity in them, read this book, because it's absolutely fantastic in understanding how to allow people to fail in safety. That's ultimately what creativity is. It's about failing less and less every day until you don't fail anymore, and you've got the thing without any mistakes in it. Do you see what I mean? So
when you're
editing, you start off failing a huge amount and you fail less each day until you've ironed out all the wrinkles and you have a piece of art which is then taken away from you because the deadlines, you've run out of time. Do you see what I mean?
Mm.
So the way that you enable creativity is to give people a safe place to fail, whereby there are no right or wrong answers. It's just, this is what we're trying today, and this experiment has allowed us to see that we're going to go this direction next. Do you see what I mean?
Mm.
And that at Pixar is what they do every day. They just say, how are we going to fail today? And what are we going to learn about the story that we're trying to tell? And if you give people the creativity and the permission to fail in safety, you will get great creative results. That's really important. That's ultimately the thesis of the book. But Creativity Inc. by Ed Catmull. Maybe you'll put it in the links.
Yeah, we'll put that, definitely put that on the resource page.
Yeah. It's a really good book. It's a great book. And then the other book about storytelling I'd recommend is a book by John York called Into the Woods, A Five-Act Journey into Story. It's a very short book. You can read it in a couple of hours, maybe 3 or 4 hours. John York is this extraordinary storyteller and gifted communicator about the power of story and about the structure of stories, and it will blow your mind. So read it. I can't recommend it highly enough. I read it once a year, and it speaks to, you know, as you evolve as a storyteller, when you read it, you get more and more out of it each year. Into the Woods, it's just a masterpiece. And John York, we should all be buying him. Like, whenever you meet, if any of you ever meet him, just buy him a drink and say thank you, because his contribution to the world of storytelling is significant with that book.
Mm.
It's really cool.
Fantastic. Well, we've got everything in this episode. As the first ever guest on Once Upon a Timeline, this has been a veritable masterclass from Eddie Hamilton. We've had history, we've had creativity, we've even had recommendations for specific books. It's been fantastic. Eddie, I can't thank you enough. And thank you for taking the time out of a very hectic Top Gun Maverick editing schedule to join us here. It's been fantastic. I've learned a ton, and I'm sure our listeners have learned a ton as well.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Paddy, and to talk to everyone listening. I imagine you're in a similar position to me, but if these resources were around when we were starting out, it would have been a gold mine, like a treasure trove of cool stuff. And so it's my honor and privilege to to kind of share some of my experiences and hopefully inspire some people out there. And, you know, never lose the hunger and the passion and the joy for the craft. You know, it's what will keep you going, you know, in the tough times. So good luck out there. And I wish you all the best with your projects. I really do.
Ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Hamilton.
What a fantastic chat with Eddie. So full of great insight and wisdom, so passionate about our art form, and giving so much advice for the next generation of film editors out there. I hope you enjoyed listening to him as much as I did. Surely one of the coolest guys to ever sit in front of a timeline. As soon as we finished our interview, I actually went back and started binge watching loads of his movies again. I got all the way up to Mission Impossible Fallout, which was so much fun, especially that final helicopter action sequence. That was so cool. So I'm all caught up and ready for Top Gun Maverick, Eddie's next editing gift to the world of cinema. With that in mind, here comes the competition question to win an annual Creative Cloud license, thanks to our friends over at Adobe. I'd like to know, what is your favorite edited action sequence from any of Eddie's movies, and why? Email your answers to me at podcast@insidetheedit.com for your chance to win. And know that Eddie himself will be picking his favorite answer early next week. So make sure you get your answers in straight away. Don't forget, if you'd like to try out the world's most in-depth editing course, head over to insidetheedit.com and you can sign up to our 14-day trial completely free. If you're frustrated with everyone trying to teach you the software, but you actually want to learn how to edit the actual art form, come and join thousands of filmmakers around the world and many of the biggest media companies and take our creative editing course. We are here to turn you into a powerful creative editor. A massive thanks, as always, to our great friends over at Universal Production Music, who supply all the great tracks to every single episode of Once Upon a Timeline. I dove deep into their massive library of film score tracks to honor Eddie's appearance this week. And if you think they're a perfect fit for what you're cutting right now, head on over to the Episode 7 page at podcast.insidetheedit.com, where you can find direct links to every single track I used this week. Please don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues. If you have time, a review on Apple Podcasts would be hugely appreciated. This is a completely free resource, and I really do want to keep it going as long as possible. You know how it is. The more it's shared, the more reviews we get, the higher the viewing figures, the longer this lasts. It's that simple. That's a wrap, dear friends. I will see you again on the next episode of Once Upon a Timeline. Stay cool, stay safe, and stay cutting.